Report at 4:30 this afternoon.
Support comes from Meyer Drapery Services. Specializing in custom draperies since 1972, Meyer Drapery offers more than 1 million linear yards of drapery material in their two local wholesale warehouses and retail outlet at 330 North Neal in downtown Champaign. Installation and design services are also available.
An area of high pressure stretching across the lower Great Lakes and Ohio Valley will produce quiet and seasonably cool conditions to the region for the region over the next couple of days. Another cold front will track across the Midwest Sunday, bringing us a chance of showers. High temperatures today will reach into the 50s across much of the Midwest. Lows tonight will drop into the 30s. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny, the high 55, the wind light and from the west tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 35 and a light west wind. Tomorrow, sunny, look for a high of 56. The wind will be out of the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, the low 34. The wind from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunday, mostly sunny and breezy with a slight chance of rain. We'll see a high in the upper 50s. The wind out of the south from 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. The outlook for Monday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-50s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across the two states, Illinois and Indiana, ranged from the upper 40s to the mid-50s, most locations reporting sunshine. At Rockford, 53 degrees. At O'Hare and Mattoon, 52. Bloomington reported a temperature of 54 degrees. Carbondale, 55. At South Bend, 49. Lafayette and Terre Haute, 51 degrees. In Indianapolis, it was 50. Willard Airport reported 52 degrees at the top of the hour. The sky, partly sunny. The dew point, 34. The relative humidity, 50%. The wind, calm. The barometric pressure, 30.18 and falling. And at 12:39, 52 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The so-called millionaire's tax on New York's top wage earners is set to expire at the end of the year, even as the state struggles to balance its books. A poll released yesterday shows that New Yorkers favor extending the tax by more than 2-1. But the millionaire's tax also has its opponents, including the state's popular and powerful governor. NPR's Joel Rose reports.
The New York City Transit Workers Union held a rally this week outside City Hall in Manhattan. In a video clip posted on the union's website, President John Samuelson called on lawmakers to extend the millionaire's tax.
The wealthiest people in New York State are going to get a nice take-home pay raise on January 1st while working families continue to struggle. It's not the wealthiest New Yorkers that need monetary relief. It's working families.
The tax in question actually applies to individuals who make more than $200,000 a year or $300,000 a year for families. When it was enacted in 2009, the tax was supposed to be temporary, but there are many in New York who would like to see it extended.
We have such great need in New York, and we also have the greatest income disparity of any state in the nation.
Ron Deutsch directs New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness. He's been arguing for years that the state needs to shift more of its tax burden to the top wage earners. He credits Occupy Wall Street protesters with giving the issue more visibility.
They're concerned about income inequality. They're concerned about the tax code and how it favors the wealthiest among us. The Occupy movement has really created space for dialogue that we haven't had for far too long.
New York is facing a projected budget deficit of more than $2 billion next year. Recent polls show that an overwhelming majority of New Yorkers support extending the millionaire's tax rather than cutting services. But Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has some pretty enviable poll numbers himself, does not seem impressed. At a news conference last week, the governor said the tax is bad for business because it encourages some of the state's most affluent citizens to leave.
The competitiveness of this state is hurt when you are one of the highest tax states in the nation and businesses and people are more mobile than ever before. I also believe that point is all but inarguable.
The majority of New York's wealth is concentrated in and around New York City, where Connecticut and New Jersey are both within relatively easy commuting distance. But there's some debate about whether taxes are really driving anyone out of New York.
There's just really no evidence that people are very responsive to small changes in tax rates at the state level.
Charles Varner is a sociologist at Princeton University. He studied the effect of a similar tax on the top 1% of wage earners in New Jersey. Varner found that people consider a lot more than just taxes when they decide to move.
Where do you want to live? Where's the weather nice? Where does my family live? Where do my friends live? Those are just much more important to people in deciding this. Tax rates are just way, way down the list.
Still, opponents of the millionaire's tax say Governor Cuomo's argument does have merit. Dan DeSalvo is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, a conservative think tank. He says New York is already one of the most taxed states in the nation.
For Governor Cuomo to make New York competitive and attractive to businesses across the country, he's got to compete with other states, and raising taxes on wealthy individuals is not the kind of signal to send to people who want to come and open a business and make a lot of money.
And of course, there's also the political calculus for Governor Cuomo to consider. The first-term governor campaigned last year on a promise not to raise taxes, and he seems determined to keep that promise no matter what the polls say. Joel Rose, NPR News.
Sorting out California's budget mess has been Governor Jerry Brown's number one problem since the day he took office. Yesterday, Brown unveiled a plan that would cut pension benefits and lower the amount taxpayers have to pay. Almost every state is wrestling with the pension problem, but in California, it's especially complex. John Myers of member station KQED reports.
Jerry Brown's plan to revamp public employee pensions in California has 12 separate proposals. Yes, it's a 12-step plan. And as with all good 12-step plans, Brown's begins with what he says is honesty about the problem.
We're not on a sustainable path. So I tried to make something that's balanced and I think is fair.
Brown's proposal covers both state and local employees. Future workers would have to stay on the job longer, in some cases up to age 67. Their retirement benefits would switch from a traditional pension, known as a defined benefit, to a hybrid system that includes a 401k-style plan. And Governor Brown is calling for more modest expectations from retirees.
What we say is the goal ought to be 75% of your salary. That's what you should get in retirement.
Brown expects the real work on pension reform to be done in consultation with the state legislature and the final plan placed on the ballot in November 2012. The early reaction from organized labor is less than enthusiastic. Willie Pelote is with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. He says Brown's hybrid 401k pension plan would shortchange retirees.
The formula that would be set would be so low that no one would be able to save the retirement that is required for them and their families to have some type of resemblance of a quality of life at that age.
Pelote and other labor leaders were strong backers of Jerry Brown in his 2010 campaign for governor, and he says that relationship isn't broken, but he says Brown needs to be reminded of the concessions made by public employees before he became governor. Getting a grasp on just how bad of a pension problem California has isn't easy. For starters, few agree on how to calculate the long-term shortfall, which could range anywhere from $100 billion to $500 billion. And unlike many states, California has layers of pension systems, each offering different benefits, says Ron Snell with the National Conference of State Legislatures.
There are independent county systems and city systems. It's a particularly complicated and difficult issue in California.
Governor Brown's plan seeks to standardize much of that and may be met with resistance on the local level. Much of the cost of local pensions is for police and firefighters who say they've earned it. Rich Brandt, a firefighter in the city of Long Beach, testified at a state legislative hearing this week.
You know, I'm not going to apologize as a safety officer. I'm not going to apologize for a firefighter for the pensions that we have.
Still, union workers say they are willing to talk, and that's solely thanks to Jerry Brown, says Joe Nation, a former state legislator who studies pensions at Stanford University.
He's exactly the right person to be able to take this on. If you had a Republican governor would never be able to, you know, get anywhere with a proposal because of the politics.
Jerry Brown, who is 73, joked with reporters Thursday that he may never take his state pension. Of course, if he can navigate the tough waters ahead on the issue, many may argue he'd have earned it. For NPR News, I'm John Myers in Sacramento.
The top issue for Illinois' lieutenant governor is education, but Sheila Simon says she's following a lot of issues as lawmakers complete the first week of their fall veto session. Simon recently toured the state's 48 community colleges. She discussed that and other issues with Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert.
One of the things I learned is that at every different community college, there's something unique going on that the rest of the state can learn from. There's a lot of experimentation going on in how to best reach students, how to best connect them with opportunities and with the workforce. The one thing I learned also is a consistent challenge for all the community colleges in students arriving at community college not ready to do college-level math. About half of the students who enter community colleges are not ready for college-level math. So that's an area that no matter where you are in the state, we can do a better job. So that's going to be the focus, one of the focuses of my report to the governor and the legislature.
One of the key areas is MAP grant funding. Checks will decline up to $420 in the next semester if lawmakers don't pass a supplemental budget bill. Is this simply a matter of ISAC, Student Assistance Commission, giving up necessary funds for that?
They're in an interesting position. The extra funds are already there and already reserved for ISAC for those MAP grants. And what the legislature, we hope, will be able to do in this veto session is give them the authorization to spend it. So it's not that we need to get money from somewhere else. The money's already been reserved for this purpose. We need the authority to spend it, and then we can make sure that those students get their complete MAP grants.
Are you confident that legislative scholarships will be canceled in the fall veto session? This is something that the governor was adamantly opposed to continuing.
I am 100% with the governor on that. Legislative scholarships have such a checkered past that we need to just cut them off altogether. I'm not sure. I can't predict what's going to happen with that. I hope that even if the legislature doesn't respond through cutting them off completely, that member by member folks will say, I don't want to be associated with this. I'm not going to use the opportunity for legislative scholarship.
What's your response to what happened with the override of the smart grid veto? I read that you supported the concept of this, but not that particular legislation.
Yeah, I like the idea of a smart grid. I'd like to have a smart way to get there. I'm not too sure that this recent override is the smartest way to get there. I don't think it's too smart for consumers. So I'm appreciative of the jobs that will be developed. I'm appreciative of getting to a smart grid. I hope that not too many people are shut off on their power as a result of this.
Are you familiar with the trailer bill that was attached and what were the concerns about that?
Yeah, the trailer bill is an improvement, certainly. The one thing it didn't improve, though, is having this process regulated through the Interstate Commerce Commission, which is set up to hear and understand